Ross Matthews, afternoons on 666 ABC Canberra.
Text 0467 922 666 or call 1300 681 666.
To ask a specialist today about gut health, this is something we do each week. And today you have with you Associate Professor Ed Giles, a paediatric gastroenterologist at Monash Children's Hospital, also researches inflammatory bowel disease at Hudson Institute of Medical Research. Associate Professor, thank you so much for giving up your precious time to be here.
No problem at all.
Let's start with your specialty research area, IBD. That captures a few conditions. Which ones?
So inflammatory bowel disease includes Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, which affect about 180,000 Australians now, including probably about 7,000 children, which is the primary area of my work. It's sort of not to be confused with irritable bowel syndrome, which unfortunately has the same sort of letters, IBS, and quite a lot of the same symptoms, but doesn't sort of have as much sort of gut damage, but it's certainly a very common condition that affects lots of people.
And certainly the difference there being the severity as well, I would assume.
Well, it's sort of I would say one of them is a dangerous condition that can lead to surgery and requires, at this stage, a lot of medication and sort of lifelong medication in most situations, certainly with young people. Whereas IBS really is often more lifestyle, diet related, but can be just as difficult for the person suffering from the condition in terms of their quality, in terms of their quality of life.
What causes something like ulcerative colitis, Associate Professor?
So we don't know. You can call me Ed, by the way. It's a lot less of a mouthful. We don't know the cause of inflammatory bowel disease. We think very strongly that it's to do with an abnormal immune response to the resident bugs, which we call, everyone talks about the microbiome, and that's a big focus of my research, but it's thought to be an abnormal response to otherwise bugs that we'd normally not cause a problem. So not classical, bugs like E. coli or Campylobacter or these nasty things, but normal bugs for some reason triggering this sort of nasty reaction. And that's what we believe, and a lot of our research it sort of lends itself to that direction, but we do not know the cause, despite a lot of research in that space.
Do you know that do certain people have certain triggers? Like if they eat a particular food, it makes things worse?
Yeah, certainly they can do. I think we don't really understand what those are. And sometimes the symptoms that people experience with inflammatory bowel disease, they may or may not directly relate to the amount of damage that we can see in the bowel. So some people can have quite bad damage in the bowel but feel okay. And other people may have none, like with IBS, or some with some forms of IBD, but, suffer quite badly. So sometimes how someone feels versus what we would describe as the objective markers don't always match up. And that's another, complicated area that we certainly don't understand.
And how would one tell the difference between if they've got IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, or that they're just maybe having too much dairy and they're a bit lactose?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the good thing is that it's actually relatively easy to work this out, through your general practitioner, because, obviously if you're concerned, there are blood tests that can be done that are reasonably good for detecting significant disease. But there's also a stool test called a fecal calprotectin, which is available in MBS, paid for by the government. And that actually detects any damage in the lower part of the bowel and is a really sensitive test for people who have bowel symptoms to determine, whether it might be IBD. And so that's quite a good screening test if you've got symptoms. It's not a good test if you've got like a couple of days of a tummy bug or you've overeaten or, something very short term. But if you've got long-standing symptoms, that's certainly something that you can mention to your doctor, because it's quite a good way of sort of stratifying what the next steps would be.
On 0467 922 666, this listener has written in saying, a gut health question, please. I've recently been diagnosed as having, you might have to correct me on this, Ed, diverticulosis?
Yep, diverticulosis.
Diverticulosis, confirmed by Top and Tail Investigations. My GP said there's nothing I can do except cut down on dairy. Is there anything else I can do to ensure my future health? Many thanks from this long-time listener from the South Side.
I'm afraid as a paediatrician, diverticulosis, which is a condition that doesn't really affect children, but it's relatively common as you get older. And these are little, basically that diagnosis means when in your colon, it should be a relatively smooth tube on the inside, but diverticular, a little out pouches that over a period of time, and this is why it only happens really in older people, you get these little pouches which can be seen on colonoscopy. And unfortunately, because of the nature of what goes through your colon, bacteria and other bugs can accumulate there and cause inflammation and damage, and then diverticulosis becomes diverticulitis, which can be quite painful. And it's actually a very understudied condition. Can be treated when it's inflamed with antibiotics, as I understand it. But again, it's certainly not an area that I would consider myself an expert in. And I think that to try and prevent diverticulosis developing, certainly sort of healthy lifestyle and healthy diet, but to what extent you can manage that once it's present is quite difficult. And certainly something to have a conversation about, and maybe worth, you know, discussing with a gastroenterologist. But it is an understudied area, can be very uncomfortable, and, you know, but is probably the consequences of sort of long-term, you know, issues with guts, which can be difficult to recognize as you're going through life with all the other things that everyone has to deal with.
And Ed, you did mention the antibiotics, so perhaps that's where we should go next, because I know that we certainly have this belief that if you are taking antibiotics, at least for a long time, you can take some, eat some yogurt, and that might help counter the impacts of the impact on your gut. Is that true?
Well, not really. So there's a little, like, I mean, probiotics are everywhere, and it's definitely an example of marketing being ahead of the science in the vast majority of cases.
Oh, really?
There is a little bit of evidence that taking some probiotics might shorten some side effects from courses of antibiotics, particularly diarrhea, but only by a very small amount. And so, you know, that maybe shorten your symptoms by 12 hours or so, depending on the situation. And I think even that evidence is a little bit contested. So I think there's really not a magic answer to that. The reality is that, you know, there's much that we don't understand about our microbiome, and it's very individual, it's highly complex, and remains poorly understood for a number of reasons. But it's also probably fairly resilient, particularly once you're in adulthood or in older childhood. So while you will do damage to it through taking antibiotics, for sure, it will recover on its own, if that makes sense.
Okay, it will do its own thing.
It will do its own thing. And us being able to influence that in a positive way is, you know, it's almost a bit of a guessing game, because there's a lot of probiotics out there which are generally very safe, but whether they match your particular microbiome, whether they're important in the particular bug that you've had or the antibiotics that you've had, you know, we just don't have that level of knowledge, is the reality. So while I think it's safe to do it, and there may be some marginal benefit in certain situations, generally, you know, it's not a huge effect, and, you know, generally we'll recover quite well anyway, I would say.
Associate Professor Ed Giles is with you, paediatric gastroenterologist at Monash Children's Hospital, also researches inflammatory bowel disease at Hudson Institute of Medical Research. Let's go to Jen on the text line. A question about the gut. If you can answer this one, Ed, let me know. Can heartburn and or reflux cause a feeling of food being stuck in your throat?
It probably can. I think, like, if you're feeling like something's getting stuck, then that's sometimes a more urgent symptom that might need to be, you know, checked out. Often it isn't anything serious, because people do have these feelings all the time. And, you know, the signals that go between the gut and our brain from a nerve perspective are, again, highly complex and increasingly understood, although not necessarily always with new treatments, but we do understand those signals, and we call it the sort of gut-brain axis. People throw these sorts of terms around. But sometimes it can be the sign that there is actually a problem. There are certain conditions that mean that food can get stuck. And sometimes the only way to find that out is through a gastroscopy, through a camera test, which is a very straightforward procedure generally. But and often in that symptoms, it will be normal. But it can be really difficult to tell, you know, and we don't, unfortunately for things like that, we don't have very good non-invasive tests.
Yeah, okay.
Like we do with it, like I mentioned, the stool test before at the lower end. There's no equivalent at the top end for that sort of thing yet, unfortunately.
Yes, got to get a camera in there. No, that's fair enough. Hi, Alice. I would welcome any thoughts on the side effects re-IBS, says this listener, etc., of cooking oils like canola, vegetable and any other that are used and used again and again in takeaway shops and restaurants. They affect me badly, but I'm not sure why. I have had a hemicolectomy, says this listener.
Well, I mean, she may have had a hemicolectomy because of inflammatory bowel disease or for some other reason. Certainly once you've taken that part of the bowel out, it does affect your reabsorption of certain things called bile acids produced by the liver, and that can mean that your tolerance for fats is much less good than others, but this could be true for other people as well. There are some medications that can sometimes help with those symptoms, and she should talk to her doctor about that, although some people don't like taking those. And as long as she, you know, sometimes it is just balancing the diet with the symptoms, but it would be worth checking that there aren't any nutritional compromises, because sometimes after you've lost that part of your bowel, it can affect, for example, B12 absorption, folate absorption. There's a few specific issues around that would need a little bit of follow-up. But I think in terms of side effects from having too much of any particular fat, you know, that's not that unusual. And most of us get plenty of fats in our diet. I know I certainly do, unfortunately.
Ed, have you got time for one more listener question?
Sure.
This person asks, how common, and again, you'll have to forgive me for the pronunciation, is disaccharide intolerance?
Disaccharide
intolerance.
So that's talking about lactose and there are other disaccharides, so lactose and fructose and isomaltose. There's a few different diets, but lactose would be the one that most people
Familiar with that one. Okay, so yeah. This listener asks, how common is that kind of intolerance and what diet do you recommend for it?
So I think that, you know, there are different disaccharidases, and so these are enzymes that are expressed in the lining of our gut. And as babies, we have a lot of lactase because all babies need milk to break down, you know, breast milk and potentially formula milk and other milks. But interestingly, over time, most people around the world express less of that, except for Caucasians. You know, white people often continue. And so we talk about lactose intolerance, but lactose intolerance is actually normal for the vast majority of the world outside of infancy.
There you go. It's
Caucasians that are the abnormal people, and not all Caucasians, because some Caucasians also have, inverted commas, lactose intolerance. But we will all have a threshold for the amount of any of these disaccharides that to tolerate, because if you have too much of something, you'll overwhelm the system. And so for many Asians, for example, that, you know, maybe a big cup of milk would be too much. But for other things, there's always a threshold. And there are tests that can be done for this, but often I find those tests are not particularly helpful. The only test that really matters is what can you tolerate? Because, again, these are not dangerous problems. These are real situations of mismatching your body with your diet and trying to work that out. And I think probably if you can't do it yourself, seeing a dietitian, you know, who can be highly skilled to help you work it out, is probably more important than any sort of fancy test that says, oh, you know, you have an official intolerance, because in the end you need to find the diet that sort of works for you.
Yes, and you'll be able to tell.
Yes. And you know, and when you're stressed or other things, you know, things can affect how you feel about these symptoms, and you know, it could be really challenging, I think, to work it all out. But again, it's not a dangerous problem, so you've got to weigh up the treatment with the disease and work out what's best for you.
Associate Professor Ed Giles, thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon. We really appreciate
it. No worries at all. All right, take care.
Cheers, you too. Bye. Associate Professor Ed Giles, paediatric gastroenterologist and IBD researcher at the Hudson Institute of Medical Research here on 666 ABC Canberra. Wangarali Majinu.